It's a little cool in here, Alan. They said it's supposed to snow tonight. We're going to start this evening with a couple of questions. And the first one is, what is worship? And what do we mean by a worship service? Even before we deal with that, secondly, why are you here in this worship service? All kinds of reasons. Well, some go because it's their habit. That's a good habit. They've always gone to church. It's Sunday. They're going to go to church. Good habits. Some attend because they're pressured to go. Someone in their family has made them feel guilty for not being at church, and so they go. It's better to do that than have problems in the family. Some go, at least in part, because of fellowship. Their friends are here, and they don't get to see them as often as they would like, and they're encouraged by their friends, and so it's an opportunity to greet each other and get a hug and give a hug and catch up on one another's life. Some go to church because they're hurting. It's been a rough week at home or at work. And so they go hoping to find healing, emotional healing, and solutions to their problems. And then some go to be entertained. And they're hoping to hear a song that'll make their heart feel glad again. Or maybe the preacher will tell a joke that they can go to work on Monday and share. But they're at church for, at least in large part, for some entertainment. Like the guy who came to church with his family, and then on the drive home, he was complaining about everything. Had a back seat full of kids. He complained about everything. He said, that person behind me was singing way too loud. They can't carry a tune in a bucket. And the sermon, way too long. The announcements droned on and on and went on. I'm sure what they were talking about. And the building was too cold or too hot. And the people were just unfriendly. And he just goes on and on and on complaining about virtually everything. And finally, one of his little boys in the back seat said, Dad, what? He said, you got to admit it wasn't a bad show for just a dollar. Well, there's a joke you can go tell others. This evening, we're going to take a close look at this vital question, what is meant by worship? This is a worship service. And so just what is worship? What do we mean when we say we have come to worship the Lord? The English word, the Bible wasn't written in English now. It was translated into English. And the English word worship means to ascribe the highest worth to something. That's pretty good. And so when we're worshiping, we're saying, according to the English word, God, you have the number one spot in my life. You come before anything or anyone else. Now, when we go to the Old Testament, the Hebrew word, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. That was, of course, this word was used in Old Testament worship, translated worship into English. That word means to bow down, to humble yourself, to recognize God's sovereignty and express complete reverence in His presence. It's a good word for worship. And then when we come to the New Testament, the New Testament written in Greek, that word translated worship expresses the idea of love and loyalty, undying gratitude. And so you put those concepts together and you come up with a first century explanation of the meaning of worship. Worship is when we come to God recognizing who He is. It's when we're saying in our hearts, God, You are first in my life. It's when we humble ourselves before Him. It's when we recognize that He's sovereign. And He is the source of all authority. And then we express to God what He's worth to us with our love and our loyalty and our undying gratitude to Him. Listen to this psalm, Psalm 95, verse 6 and through 8. I want you to listen to this. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. For He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture, and the sheep of His hand. Today, if you will hear His voice, do not harden your hearts. That captures a lot of what we're talking about. As you study the Bible, you'll find a couple of essential ingredients of worship that are always there. And the first ingredient is a sense of awe. Now, when I think about having awe before God, my mind always goes to Isaiah chapter 6, where Isaiah has a vision of the throne room of God. Isaiah 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. Can you imagine? He's seeing it. I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. Isaiah 6, 1. High and lifted up. And the train of His robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim. Each one had six wings. With two He covered His face. With two He covered His feet. And with two He flew. And one cried to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory. And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of Him who cried out, and the house was filled with smoke. So I said. Isaiah says, so I said. Woe is me, for I am undone, because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now you can't read that and miss the sense of awe felt by Isaiah in the presence of God's throne. The glory of God was everywhere. You remember in the Old Testament temple when God moved in, the glory was seen. And so the glory of the Lord is everywhere. Isaiah's in this vision is feeling the ground shake and watching the temple filled with smoke as the angels were crying out holy, holy, holy. And what did Isaiah feel? He felt totally unworthy of being in God's presence. Isaiah completely understood how awe-inspiring God really is. Surely we've all felt that sense of awe. When's the last time you've been away from the city and you looked up at night at the stars and just marveled at the vastness of the universe? That awe-inspiring part is realizing that the one who created all of this, according to John, he created all of this. He loved you. He loved me so much that he came to this earth and died for us. Now that's all. David experienced this very thing, looking up in the star at the stars at night. And in Psalm chapter 8, verses 3 and 4, he said, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you visit him." God, how do you even consider me? Look at this. And then he goes on to close that song with these words. And we actually have a song that we use these words. "O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth." And so an essential part of worship is standing in awe, or kneeling, bowing in awe of God. For our God is an awe-inspiring God. Now, the second essential part of worship is joy. Toward the end of Acts chapter 2, Luke gives us a little inside glimpse into what was happening among those first century Christians, the very first Christians. And yes, they were focusing on the apostles' doctrine and teaching. And yes, they fellowshipped, shared meals. They broke bread together. And yes, they prayed together. They were filled with awe and fear as they witnessed incredible miracles. And yes, they shared their possessions. They sold land even to have money to buy what was needed so that physical needs of others could be met. But look at verses 46 and 47. Acts 2, 46 and 47. "So continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness." That's an interesting word, isn't it? "They ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved." And so among those first century Christians, there was not only awe, that was definitely there, But there was joy there also. And man, did they enjoy being together. And as they ate with gladness and simplicity of heart. These people discovered that God is not some awesome, all-powerful God waiting for them to make a mistake so that He could punish them harshly. No, they had learned through the cross that the Creator of the universe is a God of love. In fact, John's letter going to teach them that He is love. Not just loving. He's love. And this Creator wants to express His grace and His mercy. He wants to save us from our sins. He's lifted us up out of the pit of iniquity, if you will, and brought us closer to Himself. That should be bringing some joy to our hearts. And that's why rejoicing is always a part of worship. Rejoicing is an expression of joy. Now, the problem with awe and joy is that sometimes we think they're conflicting with one another, right? Just seems like two extremes. I've told you before that I grew up in the Shell Street Church of Christ in Hilton, Oklahoma. I grew up where Perry O'Dell grew up, who eventually preached here. And as children, we were taught that you entered the auditorium, the church building, with a sense of awe. And for children, that meant we were supposed to be quiet and very reserved. No running. There was one man there that he was like the hall monitor. You know, we had these long hallways. You know what kids like to do in long hallways? They like to run. No running. Stop running. But there was a whole spirit in that auditorium of being quiet, sit still, in fact, be very still. Why? Because we were there to worship God, which involved being in awe of Him. And before the worship began, every worship service, we would be led in the song using the words of Habakkuk 2:20, "The Lord is in His holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before Him." And so the focus was to keep silent, to be in awe of God. But as children, what we heard was, God is here, you better be quiet or else. We didn't completely understand. Now, that was incredibly important for us to learn as children. A sense of awe. Not a time to cut up or laugh or act silly. I had a bunch of cousins. I mean a bunch of cousins my age. And that presented a huge challenge for us. To be perfectly still and quiet. I'm not sure I ever got there. But we were taught, this is a time to humbly proclaim to God what He's worth to you in a very respectful way. But worship is more than that. I heard about a man who visited a very formal church one Sunday. And he said right in the middle of the service, a guy had a heart attack and died. And so the ushers came in and he said they carried out five guys before they found the right one. So that's the other extreme. That's another joke you can take home and share. Sometimes it seems we're really not sure what to do. As if we think that awe and joy conflict with each other. But it takes both to worship God. We really aren't having meaningful worship until we experience awe and joy. Obviously, there are times when we'll be focused on the awe of God because of the songs we're singing or the passages we're reading. But there's other times when we're singing songs that bring joyfulness to our heart. And we're expressing it with our words. Maybe we ought to let our face express that some too, more than we do at times. But we rejoice with smiles on our faces. When's the last time you just smiled as you were singing a song? We have a lot of songs that should put a smile on your face. Our hearts are expressing that we're filled to the brim with joy and gratitude. For instance, when someone is baptized into Christ, there's always rejoicing. And when that one comes up out of that watery grave of baptism, sometimes in congregations people will clap. And I've had people say, you can't do that. That's not scriptural. But clapping is simply an expression of rejoicing. It's used other ways, but it's rejoicing. We're rejoicing. And now they're children of God. They're saved by the blood of Christ. And we should never make rules that negate rejoicing. Gladness of heart is a vital part of worshiping our awe-inspiring God. In our next lesson on what is worship, we're going to look at the question, what's the purpose or the reason for our worship? But tonight, we've had the blessing and privilege of reacquainting ourselves with that sense of awe. And that joy in our hearts as we worship. And this week, as you have private devotionals or you're reading passages, remember that. Awe and joy never compete. They are both a part of true worship. If you need to come, please come now while we stand and sing.